Okay, we are in the middle of Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Right in the middle of the page, you got the two dots with the Tanur Rabbanan, right? Okay? I just, something that came up in the last shiur, even though he's not here now, but I'll still address the question, was we dealt with the concept of Oisik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. When a person is engaged in a mitzvah, he is patur from performing other mitzvahs. So somebody asked, how does it work with a doctor who's in the office from, let's say, 12 till 7, which basically encompasses all of mincha time? Is he just off the hook? Yeah. Is he just off the hook because he's involved with a mitzvah? Each patient is a mitzvah? So the truth is that no, he's not. Because, what's that? Oh, see, that's one argument. Just he could still turn it into a mitzvah by intending to be doing chesed. But the truth is that's one argument. But even besides that, a very important rule, qualification of the concept of oisik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah is that once a mitzvah is incumbent on you, you can't dodge it by starting a different mitzvah. Right? So let's say, if before the time for mincha came, let's say a guy is not getting paid. Volunteer doctor. He's involved with a patient, and he's involved with that patient from before the time of mincha, straight till evening. Okay, then you could say oisik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. But, when the time for mincha comes, and you finished an appointment, and now you're taking in a new patient, you can't exempt yourself from mincha by doing that. Once the mitzvah becomes incumbent upon you, you can't start another mitzvah and exempt yourself. So if you're already involved in a mitzvah, and this next mitzvah kicks in, you're exempt of the second mitzvah. Okay. That's just an outstanding point from the last year. Now we begin the next sugya. Tanur Rabbanan. Now we're going to elaborate on the din, on the machloikas we saw in the Mishnah about the position for Kriyat Shema. Tanur Rabbanan. Beis Hillel Oimrim. Oindim v'koirim. You can recite Kriyat Shema standing up. Yoshvim v'koirim. You can recite it sitting down. Matim v'koirim. You can recite it reclining. Hoyuchim baderech v'koirim. You can recite it while you're on the go, while you're walking. Oisim b'melachtam v'koirim. You can even do it while you're in the middle of performing labor. We'll see, all these things will be qualified later in the Masechta, but their point is that they say there's no particular position you need to be in when you're saying Kriyat Shema. It can be sitting, standing, lying, cartwheels, whatever. Now, Umayse b'Rabbi Yishmael b'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, there was an incident with Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Shahayu mesubim b'makay mecha. They were sitting together somewhere. V'haya Rabbi Yishmael muter. Rabbi Yishmael was reclining. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah zakuf. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was sitting up. Okay? So, Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, about two-thirds down. Kivan she'igia zman Kriyat Shema. Then, the time for Kriyat Shema hit, it was evening. The time for Kriyat Shema hit. Rabbi Shmuel was in a lying position. Rabbi Elazar was sitting up. He to Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar reclined. V'zokaf Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Shmuel sat up straight. So, Omar loy Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said to Rabbi Shmuel, Yishmael achi, Yishmael my brother, you were lying down. It's Kriyat Shema at night time. You were in the perfect position. I lied down to emulate you. So you shut up. Yishmael, my brother. I'll give you a mashal about what you just did. You're like a person who just received a compliment on his beautiful beard. People told him, you have a nice, beautiful beard. well grown. Omar lehem. He said, ah, you think it's nice? Yeah, keneged hamashchisim. Tomorrow, I'm going to take it to the barber, we'll shave it all off. So, afkach, that's exactly what just happened here. I complimented you. I actually showed, when the fut aleph with aleph, about three quarters down the page. First one on the line is hamashchisim. Fut aleph with aleph. Three quarters down. First word is hamashchisim. So he said, that's what you just did. Afkach. That's what happened here. Atok kol manshani zokuf atamuta. I was sitting up. As long as I was sitting up, you were reclining. Achshav kshani tesi. Now the time for Kriya Shema came, so I lied down to be like you. I showed you that I admire what you're doing. In nighttime Kriya Shema, to lying down. Atozo kafta. How do you respond to my compliment? He said, oh, if you like what I'm doing, I won't do it anymore. I'm going to sit up. I won't say it lying down. So, why? Omar loy, so he told him, Anio sisi kidime besilo. I followed besilo. Ve'ato osiso kidime beshamai. And you followed beshamai. When you lied down, you made a point of lying down for the nighttime kriyashma, that's following beshamai shita. But? Why? But? Right. But he manifested Hillel's Shita. Meaning, by sitting up, he's showing that we don't follow Beis Shammai. Now you're right. We'll see soon. You're saying if he would have stayed lying, that would also be in accordance with Hillel. That's true. We'll see. And on the contrary, that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah also knew, that we follow Hillel. He also figured that, yes, of course, Hillel say it's in any position, but it's okay lying down too. So I'll lie down, as would seem to be appropriate for the nighttime Kriya Shema. So he said, no. You were following Beis Shammai. Now you might say, basically what you asked, so what's the problem? Beis Hillel also agree that you can say it lying down? So what's the problem? No. Veloy oy, furthermore, the reason I felt it necessary to shoot up was Eloshema Yiru Atalmidim. The Talmidim who saw you lie down for Kriya Shema, they might see that the Yikvu Alocha Lidairis. And they might say, oh, that's how our Rebbe's hold. That's the Alocha. You're supposed to lie down for the evening Kriya Shema. So I set up to show that no, we do not follow the Shita that you must be lying down. If Rabbi Elazar hadn't been there, Rabbi Shmuel presumably would have remained lying down. Because, what's that? Yeah. That would be fine according to Beis Hillel. To remain in whatever position you are is fine. But to make a point of going and following Beis Shammai Shita, that's what Rabbi Shmuel objected to. Well, he didn't stand. He sat up. He sat. Right. Well, yes and no. No one would think, well, we'll see soon, but no one would think that you have to dafka not lie down for the nighttime Kriya Shema.
Yeah, you would.
Why? Well, they weren't, he wasn't, they were dealing with Talmidim who knew the basic halacha, meaning they understood that there's no shita that you dafka have to stand during the nighttime Kriya Shema. The question is, do you have to be lying down or not? So you set up to show you don't have to be lying down. Now, vechitema. So what will you say? Still, what's the problem? Exactly what you just said. What's the problem? So I lied down. That doesn't conflict with Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel also say you can say it lying down. Hanimili demate ve'osamei ko. No, that's only if a person was already reclining, so you stay in reclining position. Avol hocha. But here, Kivan de ad hashto avisa zaku. That up till now you were sitting up straight. Be hashto mute. And now you deliberately, you made a point of lying down. Amri, the Talmidim would say, Shmamino kibe shamai sviru. Oh, you see that they hold like Beis Shammai. So therefore, my concern kicked in. Shema yiru al talmidim v'yikmu alocha l'doris. The talmidim might see that and figure, okay, that's the alocha. The truth is that yes, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah certainly knew what Beis Hillel say, and he certainly held like Beis Hillel. He just figured, what do you have to lose? Lying down doesn't conflict with Beis Hillel, so it'll be yaitza all shitas. Rabbi Shmuel said no. Doing that could give the impression that you're dafka following Beis Shammai because you follow that shita. That's a dangerous impression, and therefore I made a point of sitting up, even though that's not required according to Beis Hillel. But I wanted to highlight, to show, that no, we don't follow the shita that you have to lie down. Okay, what's that? No. He only set up to counter what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah did. But had he been by himself, there would have been no problem to stay lying down. What's that? Yeah, the only problem was that since Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah up till now had been sitting up straight, and now made a point of lying down, that's what gave that Beis Shammai-like impression. But, what's that? If there's no students, it certainly wouldn't matter. But even if there were students, but they had both been reclining in the first place, that would also be okay. Because they still say, whatever your position that you're in, you can do. The only problem was that here the impression was that he made a point of davka lying down. That was the problematic impression that Rabbi Yishmael felt he had to counter. Okay. So now, what is the conclusion on this discussion? Tani Rav Yecheskel. So Rav Yecheskel cited a braisa that states, "Asa kedivrei Beis Shammai asa." If you follow Beis Shammai, that's okay. Kedivrei Beis Hillel asa. If you follow Beis Hillel, that's okay. Why? Basically, because of the logic we saw earlier. Beis Hillel don't have a problem with lying down for the nighttime Kriya Shema or standing up. They just, or for the morning Kriya Shema, they just say you don't have to. So if you follow like Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel, you're okay. Rabbi Yosef Amar, Rabbi Yosef says no. Also, kedivrei Beis Shammai loy also veloy klum. If a person followed Beis Shammai, he did nothing. It was not yaitzeh. That's very surprising. Because what are we saying? If you're machmir like Beis Shammai, you're not. Beis Hillel don't have an essential problem with that. It's just you don't have to follow Beis Shammai. You don't have to be lying down for the nighttime Kriya Shema. But he's saying, if you make a point of following Beis Shammai, you're not yaitzeh Kriya Shema. Now he'll prove that. Ditna, as it says in the Mishnah, you'll see that if you follow a shita that is not accepted la halacha, you're not yaitzeh at all. If a person was sitting with his head and most of his body in the sukkah, and his table inside the house. Now, if your sukkah is the right size, there's essentially no problem with this. Meaning, let's say I have a big sukkah, but you like the air. So you're sitting right at the entrance to the sukkah, you're reclining. Most of your body is in the sukkah, so you're okay as far as that goes. The table's in the house. There's no problem with that, essentially. Right? Just as Xera. You're eating off that table, right? You're picking food off the table, which is outside the sukkah, and you're bringing it into you in the sukkah. There's Xera that you might end up following the table. You might end up sticking your head into the house and eating in the house. So Beis Shammai say, don't do that. Beis Hillel machshirin. Beis Hillel say it's okay. As long as the sukkah is the right size, it's okay. So Amalehem Beis Hillel to Beis Shammai. So Beis Hillel said to Beis Shammai, you say that a person, that it's unacceptable to sit in the sukkah and eat off a table that's in the house? Ma'aseh she'alchu ziknei Beis Shammai v'ziknei Beis Hillel. There was an incident where the elders of Beis Shammai and the elders of Beis Hillel went, Levaker es Rabbi Yochanan ben HaKoyranis. To visit Rabbi Yochanan ben HaKoyranis. Mitzahu shayayoyshoy verubay besukah v'shulchanay v'tzoy chabayit. And they found him exactly in this position. He was sitting in the sukkah. He was eating off a table that was inside the house. V'loy amru loy klum. and nobody told him anything. So you see that it's okay. Even the elders of Beis Shammai were okay with that. Amru lahem. So Beis Shammai say, well, we have a little bit of a different version of what actually happened there. Misham Raya, you're proving it from that incident. Afeim amru lai. No, they definitely did speak up. They told him, Im kein ha'yisa noyeg, if you were doing it this way, meaning eating off a table that's in the house, like kiyamto mitzvah sukkah miyamecha, you would never fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah. What are we showing from here? We're showing from here that even though it's only derabanan, right? Essentially, you're certainly yoytze this way. It's derabanan, there's a gzeira that a person who eats off a table in the house might end up in the house. And yet, Beis Shammai say, if this is what you did not fulfill the essential mitzvah of sukkah. Meaning, the chachamim have the power to take away the mitzvah from you. Don't say, well, at least I fulfilled it on the deraisa level. No. The chachamim have the power to take away the mitzvah from you. So the same applies here. But actually here it's even much more of a stretch. There at least, Beis Shammai were machmir. They say, if you're meiko, if you acted leniently, you weren't yotze. But here, we're applying it in the opposite direction. This is very interesting. They still are meiko. They say, you don't have to lie down. You don't have to stand for the Shachas Kriyash. Beis Shammai are machmir. They say, lie down and stand up. And now we're saying that if you make a point of following Beis Shammai, they still will take away from you the fulfillment of the mitzvah. You did not fulfill the Araisa requirement of Kriyash. It's a very novel concept. How does this work? So, the Dva Avram just explains the mechanics here. How the Chachamim can go ahead and rob you of a daraisa that you essentially fulfilled. He says, once the Chachamim decided that it's wrong to do it a certain way, midirabbanan, doing it that way is an avera, right? Because you're not allowed to transgress the rabbanan. Now, you did the mitzvah daraisa, but you transgressed an avera while you're doing it, right? Because you transgressed the command of the Chachamim, which the Torah requires you to follow. Now, there is a rule that mitzvah bar be'aveira, if you fulfill a mitzvah through doing an aveira, you're not yoytze the mitzvah. And that's how the Chachamim managed. He said, oh, we're imposing an issur derabanan to do the mitzvah in this way. If you do the mitzvah in that way, you transgress an issur derabanan in order to fulfill the mitzvah. That turns it into a mitzvah bar be'aveira, a mitzvah that's fulfilled through, by means of an aveira, in which case, you're not yet to the mitzvah at all. Even the deraisa.
Is this a problem? Like, do you see this happening? Is this always applies? Like, for example, Megillah and Lulav.
Yeah.
If someone were to do this, if someone were to, I guess.
It's hard to find other applications of this kind. There won't be so many applications of the idea. But in instances where the Chachamim don't want you doing it a certain way, according to this sheet at least, they actually took away the araisa level fulfillment of the mitzvah. Where? What?
You say that a mitzvah that comes through the air is never good?
No, the Jews, there's a halachic principle that a mitzvah that comes about through an avera is not fulfilled into a mitzvah. That's a rule. Yeah, that's absolute. Exactly how the parameters of the rule work is subject to a lot of discussion. But yes, that is an ironclad principle in halacha. That's why, for example, lulav agazel. Well, okay, that might or might not be a good example. But using a stolen object for a mitzvah. Well, there's such things. A mitzvah that comes about through an avera is not called fulfilled. Is not the mitzvah is not fulfilled. Okay. That's right. That's the big chiddush here. Taisus highlights this chiddush. Taisus says, note that first of all, we're saying that by transgressing the rabbanon, you'll lose the mitzvah d'oraisa. But they were saying even more than that here. By being machmir in a way that's not approved, you can lose the mitzvah d'oraisa. That's a big chiddush here. They still don't want you following Beis Shammai Shita. And therefore they took away the whole fulfillment of the Deoraisa. Now, if that's not enough, Rav Nachman by Yitzchok Omar, Rav Nachman by Yitzchok takes it a step further. Also, kedivrei Beis Shammai, if a person follows Beis Shammai Shita, chayiv misa. It's chayiv misa. It needs to be Beis Shammai. It doesn't mean a person will kill him. It's not. We say this in the Mishnah. What did the Mishnah say? Omar Rabbi Tarfon, ani ha'yisi bo baderech. I was traveling on the road. He was a talmid of Beis Shammai, right? The Tetzi Likros Kedivrei Beis Shammai. The nighttime Kriyas Shema hit, and I reclined. I get off my horse and I lie down on the ground to recite Kriyas Shema like Beis Shammai. The Sikanti Ba'atzmi B'tnei Alistim, and I was endangered by robbers. I was almost killed. Amrulai. How did the Chachamim respond? They weren't impressed by his Mesirus Nefesh, but they said, Kedaya Yisalachu Ba'atzmacha. You deserved to have that come upon you. Shabbat al divrei Beisila, because you transgressed the words of Beisila. Meaning, yes, there's a subtle derabanan here, and by transgressing it, we're saying chayiv misa. Obviously, this is based on the dictum of Torah together yishchenu nashkosh. When a person makes a breach, when Chachamim are trying to establish a fence, he deserves to be bitten by a snake. That's really the issue here. Let's understand what's going on here. It's not that if a person is machmir in accordance with the shita that's not accepted la'alocha, it's chayiv misa. But the point here is something else. The point here is that the Chachamim were endeavoring to establish in Klal Yisrael that la'alocha follows Beisila. It's considered an unhealthy situation that there are two schools of behavior in Klal Yisrael. Today we're used to it, right? Sephardim do this, Ashkenazim do that, Chassidim do this. Everybody does all kinds of different things. At one time, that was considered very sacrilegious. Today, it inevitably developed. It's a result of the Golus. But at one time, that was considered unthinkable. What? There should be two different modes of fulfillment of mitzvahs in Klal Yisrael. And therefore, yes, even though there was a machlokes that carried over for a few generations, the conclusion was that the halacha follows Beis Hillel. And the Chachamim took pains to nail that in properly. This was accepted even by the Talmidim of Beis Shammai. And therefore, the issue here wasn't so much do Kriya Shema Beisila's way. The issue here is more, we have to make it clear. It has to be clearly impressed on everybody's mind that from now on halacha follows Beisila. And therefore, Rabbi Tarfon was coming along. If someone would come along and ruin that effect, it's actually a breach. It's actually causing ruination. He's trying to be machmir, but he's actually causing ruination. He's causing that lack of halachic clarity in Klal Yisrael. And therefore, yes, that's called Poyretz Geder Yishkenu Nachash. We apply the principle that a person who makes a breach, an offense that the Chachamim are trying to establish, ought to be bitten by a snake. So it's interesting, Yerushalmi Taka comments here. Yerushalmi comments, note how severe the Rabbanan is. Had Rabbi Tarfon skipped Kriya Shema altogether, he would have transgressed the Asay. There's no Chiyuv Misa there. You do Tshuva and that's that. Right? Now that he did do Kriya Shema, but he did it against the way the Chachamim wanted, Chayiv Misa. Chayiv Misa. You see, the Yerushalmi says, Tovim Deidecha Miyoyin, Chavivin Yeinom Shosei from Yisem Yidivrei Torah. You see that in a way, the Derabbanans are even more important than the Deoraisas. Now this has to be appreciated, because people do sometimes tend to have a little bit of a lax approach about the Derabbanans. But the way Rabbeinu Yonah explains it is that actually, when you're talking about a mitzvah Deoraisa, you didn't do the mitzvah properly, okay, you transgress the mitzvah. When a person does not attribute the proper gravity to the fences that the Chachamim are setting up, what he's actually doing is, or let's start from the other direction in order to properly understand the opposite. What is the importance of the Derabbanans? Fences. To ensure that you keep away from transgressing the Torah. Right? Therefore, Rabbeinu Yonah says, a person who fulfills the Derabbanans, he's cooperating with the Chachamim's sense of danger Chachamim felt that there's a danger here that their eyes can be transgressed, and therefore they made this fence. Keep it away. Keep you away from the deraisa. Right? When a person transgresses that, he's showing that he's not worried about transgressing a deraisa. You're supposed to be scared of transgressing a deraisa. But Ben Yehuda says this is actually the mitzvah of the Yiras Shamayim. The whole concept of derabanan really is one big fulfillment of the chiyuv of Yiras Shamayim. And when a person takes derabanan lightly, it's worse than transgressing, so to speak, a regular mitzvah. He's transgressing in general the whole concept of Yiras Shamayim. He's showing, I'm not scared. The Chachamim are saying, a person who's scared of transgressing Hashem's word should take this measure to keep away. A person comes and transgresses that, he's showing, I'm not scared of transgressing a mitzvah. Therefore, that's a lot worse than transgressing any individual mitzvah deraisa. Conformance to the Rabbanan is considered a basic fulfillment of the mitzvah of Yiras Shamayim. So therefore, Rabbeinu Yehuda says, yes, actually, conforming to the Rabbanan is fulfillment of a much greater mitzvah deraisa, the mitzvah of Yiras Shamayim. So don't take it lightly when you're busy fulfilling a Rabbanan, it's a little inconvenient, and you're thinking to yourself, it's the Rabbanan anyways, why am I putting in all this effort? You have to realize that a person is keeping in circumstances when a person is mechuyav to keep the second day of Yom Tov. Often a person feels it's not the real thing. You know, when I went to Chutz Laaretz, more than that, went to Chutz Laaretz, we don't keep the second day Yom Tov, but you have to act as though you do. You can't do any malachas. It's not the real thing anyways. It feels like such a waste. Right? When a person is keeping another day of Yom Tov, going through the whole Seder, right? It's not the real thing anyways. What a waste. No, Chas v'Shalom, you have to realize that what you're doing might be an even bigger mitzvah than the deraisa. Remember, I pointed this out to my father-in-law when I sat at his Seder. I said, you are fulfilling the derabbanan, keeping the Seder. I'm fulfilling the derabbanan. Well, the truth is, they were both derabbanans. I don't remember now what my argument was. But by fulfilling that Seder, that second day, you are actually engaged in fulfilling the mitzvah of Yiras Shamayim. Say something? I don't understand. You know what? The Chachamim made fences because they want to keep you far away from the possibility of transgressing as of a deraisa. Okay. No, that always illustrates our point. What's that? I don't want to get into that. That's a discussion for the Gemara there. But Lamaisa, you're not asking a question what you're saying. You're bringing your support to what we're saying. On the contrary, you see the idea there too. What the pshat there in the Gemara is, let's leave when we get there. But that's the point. The Chachamim are showing us where a person with a true sense of Yiras Shamayim is careful. If a person ignores that, he's showing that he does not have that sense of Yiras Shamayim. He takes Hashem's commands lightly, and therefore, it's even more severe than transgressing certain deraisas. Okay, I'll just note.
Can we just say here, like, this is like a something from the most of the in this case, because it's there's a lot of quality.
Because?
What is
going to do? You're saying that in a sense it's worse. More severe.
It's worse because this is an issue where, it's a violin on this trial. It's nice to get rid of it. Yeah. So this is a particularly, every single thing, derabbanan that you're over, you're going to be chayim misa.
Well, the issue of chayim misa, the truth is that Rabbi Yehuda seems to imply that this concept of being chayim misa for transgressing a derabbanan applies when it is done because of a more lax feeling about their abundance. If that's what motivates a person to sin, to transgress, then it's really the same issue. When you in general take the whole concept of their abundance more lightly, you're again breaching the same fence as the Lord discussed with the one we're trying to establish here. If it's an individual derabbanan that you transgressed it because the Yetzer Hara overcame you, and you would have transgressed because also if it was deraisa, you might not be subject to this whole thing. But the point is that if you transgress the Rabbanon because it's only the Rabbanon, you have to appreciate that that's actually contravening the whole concept of Yiras Shamayim, and that is the same concept as what we're doing here. You are breaching a very, very fundamental fence that's required for the welfare, for the spiritual welfare of Klal Yisrael. Right? Okay. So what comes out of this Lamaisa? So Lamaisa, okay, yeah, it's basically as we discussed, that this is how it's put down Halacha. You say Kriya Shema in whatever position you're in. You should not make a point. Dafka should not make a point of standing up for the morning Kriya Shema. Do not make a point of lying down for the evening Kriya Shema. In fact, the place can say if you're standing at the time of the evening Kriya Shema, don't even make a point of sitting down. Now,
lying down, what position lying down is acceptable?
What's that?
What position of lying
reclining on the side. Reclining on one side. Okay, so that's in a general way. Now, what happens if a person... Okay, so yeah, a person wants to stand up for the morning Kriya Shema, that we know is unacceptable. What if a person wants to stand up for the morning Kriya Shema, that's unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
Yeah. What if he was standing and now he wants to sit for the morning Kriya Shema? That's fine. That's simply conforming to Beis Hillel. At the nighttime Kriya Shema, what if a person was standing and he wants to sit down? That's a problem because that's tending towards Beis Shammai. What if a person was sitting down and now he wants to stand up? That should be fine. So interestingly, the place can say it's not. And here we get into another little bit of a subtle point. There's a little bit of ambiguity in the Rishonim if, when Beis Hillel say a person should not change position, some Mefarshim say, some places can say, and this actually seems to be accepted by Halacha, that actually, according to Beis Hillel, when they say, well, don't stand up if you weren't standing up before, it's not just that they're telling you not to follow Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel actually maintain that sitting down for Kriya Shema is the ideal position. Forgetting Beis Shammai. Forgetting Beis Shammai, leaving Beis Shammai aside. The issue takes on a whole new dimension once we throw in Beis Shammai. But forgetting Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel maintains sitting down for Kriya Shema is the ideal position, both for the morning and for the evening. And therefore, when a person is already sitting down and he wants to stand up for the evening Kriya Shema, we tell him not to do so. So therefore, Kriya Shema, either switch of position is a problem. For a person standing to sit down, that looks like Beis Shammai, don't do that. If you're sitting and you want to stand up, well, then you don't have a problem with Beis Shammai. But in any case, it's not ideal. If you're sitting, stay sitting, because that's the ideal position to say Kriya Shema.
The first one that you've already said is, what's wrong with sitting down? Because Beis Shammai said lying down on one side, not sitting.
Right, the place... Yeah, it's a little tending towards Beis Shammai, right.
Okay.
No, that's for the brachas of Kriya Shema. That's okay, as long as it's not right when you begin Kriya Shema. You sit down for the brachas of Kriya Shema in the first place. That's okay. Now, why is this? So, there's the more basic understanding, and then there's the deeper understanding. Mefarshim say that the most ideal state for Kriya Shema is sitting down because then a person can be best focused. For example, we find by Birkas HaMazon, by most brachas, a person should say it's sitting down. Birkas HaMazon, you're not supposed to say standing up. You're supposed to say it's sitting down because then you're settled, you focus. So Kriya Shema also, you should say it's sitting down, it's the best state to say it in because then you're settled and focused, better than standing up, forgetting all other considerations. And therefore, even when there's no issue of Beis Shammai, a person who has been sitting down should not stand up. Okay, that's number one. But there's more to it also. Some Paiskim cite, Aruch HaShulchan, the Kapachayim, they cite from the Zohar, the Arizal, actually said that Kabbalistically, it's better to be seated while you're saying Kriya Shema than standing. In a very basic way, just according to my limited understanding, Tefillah is a build-up. Tefillah is a build-up. Each part of the Tefillah brings you to a certain place from which you can ascend to the higher place, which the next part of the Tefillah is. Begins with the Brachas, continues with the Karbanis, Psukei de Zimra, the Brachas of Kriya Shema, with Kriya Shema and Anto Shemoneh Esrei. the fikta shemana esrog. So therefore, part of the build-up is that you're sitting during Kriya Shema, and then you go from there to standing for Shemana Esrog. That part is part of the build-up of how the structure of the build-up of the tefillah should look. And therefore, dafka sitting for Kriya Shema is actually the more optimal state. I'll just note, that first of all, if a person sits down, even in the mire of Kriya Shema, just because he's uncomfortable to be standing up, that's okay. Or other such situations. If you stand up or sit down, you change position because of some external factor that, you know, something came up that you gotta move, or something like that, that's okay. Not a person who just goes ahead and changes position arbitrarily. Something interesting to note, that the Chassam Sefer used to stand up for both Kriya Shemas, which is very surprising. And his Talmidim struggled to explain it. Chassam Sefer Lemaisa was, in general, in different spheres than the rest of us are, so he can't really know what was going through his mind. But it seems to go against an explicit halach, at least as far as the morning Kriya Shema goes. What's that? No, apparently not. There's a lot of discussion among his Talmidim about what might have been the pshat, but apparently not. Apparently nobody asked him. One of his Talmidim says something interesting. And this is a qualification the poskim themselves draw. They say that after all said and done by Yom Kippur, it's different. Yom Kippur, because of the awe of the day, if a person feels like he wants to stand for Kriya Shema, that's okay. Because here it's got nothing to do with Beis Shammai. If a person just feels the awe of Yom Kippur, he just feels like he needs to stand. It's a natural feeling, right? A person is driven to stand on Yom Kippur when he's being Mekabel Ol Malchus Shemayim. The place of the Rama already says that that's okay. You can stand on Yom Kippur, it's acceptable. What we say all throughout the year not to do, on Yom Kippur is acceptable. So one of the Talmidim suggested that some Sefer simply felt this way with every Kriya Shema. Just as he approached Kriya Shema, he just was driven to his feet. Certainly not because of Beis Shammai that he held that you have to be standing, but it was from the sense that he was having at the time that simply drove him to his feet. Okay, that's what one of the Talmidim says to explain it. And this Talmid, if I remember correctly, it's this Talmid who said that what he did was, they used to follow the Chassam Sofer's Minhagim. So, in order to follow Chassam Sofer's Minhagim without running into this halachic question, he would actually stand up in the middle of the brachas preceding Kriya Shema. He would stand up in the middle of Yetzirah or something like that, and he would just stay standing through Kriya Shema. Okay, but that's...
So you are allowed to remain standing?
Yes, if you're standing beforehand, you're allowed to remain standing. Yeah, yeah. So, Lemaisa, bottom line, the essential halacha is do not change your position to stand for morning Kriya Shema or to sit for the evening Kriya Shema. Evening Kriya Shema we can just say in a straightforward way, remain in whatever position you are, whether standing or sitting. In the morning, it's okay to sit down if you're standing, but not to stand up if you're sitting. And as we added, there's actually a deeper significance to sitting during Kriya Shema, which in general is considered the optimal state to be in during Kriya Shema. Okay, that's that. We move on. That's true. The Poskim discuss that. And in fact, the Poskim say exactly that. A person who feels like he wants to stand up for Kriya Shema because, exactly what we just discussed, just I guess we don't apply it to the Chassam Sofer. But the place can say, besides Beis Shammai and everything else, right, we already showed this whole issue of Beis Shammai. Person who feels like he wants to stand for Kriya Shema because it feels like the right thing to do, it says he's an avarian. He's a sinner. We tell him just sit down like everybody else. And the place can say that, besides everything we've discussed, a person manifesting piety in front of everybody else in such a way where the other great people around him don't do that, that is a sin in and of itself. That's a sin in and of itself. For a person to show that, yeah, the rav of the shul is sitting, but I can't sit during Kriya Shema because of the greatness of what's going on at the moment, that's a sin in and of itself. Here, certainly, the Chassam Sofer was exempt of this because in halacha, there is room given for a person who is famous for his piety, and everybody expects to see pious behavior on his part. is allowed to manifest such things. Sam Sofer was clearly acknowledged as the outstanding figure of his generation. So as far as that's concerned, Sam Sofer didn't have to worry about that. But that itself, that feeling of, it seems only appropriate that I should be standing while I'm being mekabel al malchus shamayim. About that too, the place can say, no. If a person manifests piety in the presence of people greater than him, he actually ought to be excommunicated. I knew of a Rebbe who used to say, when he would come meet him, who would start getting a little bit too, he would say, hey, you're from Kaddish Shoin. Okay. By the way, we'll just note that we qualify this by saying that that applies only for extra credit sorts of piety. When it's an issue of keeping basic halacha, then we say the rule is, people around you are not keeping it. Let's say you're in a shul, everybody's talking during Kriyas HaTorah. You're going to look like you think you're who knows what by sitting quietly and refusing to answer people who talk to you. Then we say, you're Dafka Mechuyev to do it. It's an issue of halacha, you ignore everything else around you, and you do what you got to do. Okay, we move on. The Mishnah. B'shachar mevorech shtayim lifoneo ve'achas la'achareo. In morning, you make two brachas before Kriyashma, right? It's Yitzer or an Avor Abba, and one after. That's Emes V'Yatzi, which is one long bracha until Gaal Yisrael. In the evening, you recite two brachas beforehand and two brachas afterwards. Right? Mar Barovim and Ava Soilam. And then afterwards you have Gal Yisrael and Hashkivenu. Achas Saruka and Achas Ktsara. One long and one short. What does that mean? One long and one short. Any suggestions? So Rashi says, referring to what we just discussed, the two brachas after Kriya Shema Ma'ariv, Emes Ve'Emunah is long, Hashkivenu is short. Okay, but Lamaisa, the Mishnah is a little ambiguous. The Mishnah just mentioned seven brachas, and at the end it tells us one of them is long and one of them is short. But okay, that's Rashi. Rashi says we're going on the last two brachas mentioned. Emes Ve'Emunah is long, Hashkivenu is short. What's that? Emes V'Emunah? It is. It's Gal Yisrael. It concludes with Gal Yisrael. Yeah.
Why do we have to tell us the length of the
brachah? Oh, that's a good question. The next line will answer that. Makom she'amru laharich, wherever the Chachamim said to recite a bracha at length, in a rashay lekatzer, you're not allowed to shorten it. So that's the significance. We note that this one is long, this one is short. And therefore, what's long should not be short. Lekatzer, where the Chachamim said to keep it short, in a rashay laharich, you are not allowed to make it longer.
Is there a habit that you play for
Yisrael? We'll see soon that there might be more. Well, we'll see soon. There might be more than a half a minute. We'll see. Good question. You're picking up on some of the points that the Rishonim discuss. Let's see. Lachtoy, where the Chachamim said to sign off the bracha, to end off with a baruch. Lachtoy means to seal the bracha formally. Baruch ato Hashem. Einar Hashem sheloy lachtoy. You can't skip that ending. Sheloy lachtoy. The Chachamim said not to end off with Baruch and Erashe Lachtoim. You can't decide to enhance the bracha and end off with Baruch. Okay, so here we're putting down what seem to be some pretty fundamental principles. You are not allowed to shorten a long bracha or lengthen a short bracha. Now, the Noach is that obvious we shouldn't go tinkering with brachas. So Noach seems to take that to mean that don't change any bracha. Jonathan is noting that that's not what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said, don't make a long bracha short, and don't make a short bracha long. What happens if I want to help the Chachamim out? I'll take a long bracha and make it even longer. And I'll take a short bracha and abbreviate it even more. Is that acceptable? Okay. So, just in order to put some perspective here, because this is a very, very important subject. Subject for a lot of discussion. First of all, if we're going to take this mission at face value, that you're not allowed to tinker with the Nusach of Brachas, first of all, what does that say for Yetzirus? And for insertions that we make in the Yomei Noroim, different times of the year, right? We insert different things into it. Well, let me ask another question. You know that there are different Nusachos in davening. There's Nusach Sfard, Nusach Ashkenaz, right? Often Nusach Sfard has a longer word, a few more words than Nusach Ashkenaz has. So according to the Ashkenazim, Nusach Sfard is transgressing this? According to Sfard, is Nusach Ashkenaz transgressing this? So Lamaisa, there are really three fundamental explanations in the Rishonim as to exactly what this means. Rashi says that yes. The way the Rishonim understand Rashi is that yes, you are not allowed to tinker with the Nusach of a Bracha at all. The way of Noach understood. Not allowed to tinker with the Nusach of a Bracha at all. Don't make any changes. The Rosh writes in the Tshuva, he says, I have a Sefer that I received from those who preceded us, in which they show the significance of every word of the Tefillah and the significance of the numbers of words in each Tefillah. It's very interesting. You look at Sfarim like the Rekeach, Shibale Aleket, they expound on this a lot. They show how this bracha has this amount of words corresponding to this and corresponding to that. Anshei Knesset HaGdola put immense efforts into formulating the Nusach of the bracha. So therefore, don't tinker with it at all. That's understanding number one. According to this, we're going to have a hard time understanding all the different insertions that we find, also the variations between the slides. Understanding number two is that of Rabbeinu Tam. Umamish picked up on what you said. Rabbeinu Tam says no. Changing the slides of brachas here and there is not the problem. The problem is when you have a short bracha, you can't turn it into a long bracha. That's all. But to make a short bracha a little shorter is okay. Or, you have a long bracha, don't turn that into a short bracha. You want to make it longer, that's fine. And therefore, all the insertions are no problem. And the truth is that we only find insertions in long brachas. Short brachas are brachas like the brachas that you say before you eat food. Right? A few words, and that's all. Then we don't find insertions. You find insertions in the long brachas. According to Rabbeinu Tam, that's all no problem. What's that? Basically, all brachas are deemed long for these purposes, with the exceptions of brachas like brachas before food, brachas of mitzvahs, right, which is all the same idea, and Tosefta lists what are the short brachas. The last bracha of Birkas HaMazon, even though Lamaisa there are a lot of words to it, it's still called short. See why in a minute. And one more, I forgot which one. What's that? Yeah. So what do you? You're raising another question of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says, Rashi says that achas arukah b'achas k'sarah, one long and one short, means emes v'emunah and hashkivenu is a brisa. The set that I just mentioned lists the short brachas, and hashkivenu is not one of them. So Rabbeinu Tam has a very original understanding of the Mishnah. Rabbeinu Tam says, when it says, you say the seven brachas, right? Achas arukah v'achas k'sarah does not mean one is long and one is short. It means something else. Whether you say it long or short, achas arukah v'achas k'sarah, he translates his meaning, whether you say it long or short, meaning it doesn't matter. You can say it long, you can say it short. Just those brachas that are meant to be short, don't make them long. And those brachas that are specifically meant to be long, don't make them short. That's Rabbeinu Tam. Lamaisa, the third approach, which is Lamaisa accepted as the halacha, is the Rashba. The Rambam also has this understanding. He says that Arukah and Ktsara has nothing to do with the length of the bracha. Arukah and Ktsara means the structure of the bracha. A bracha that begins and ends with Baruch is called long, because it's got a long structure. A bracha that begins but doesn't end, or ends but doesn't begin with Baruch, is a short bracha. And therefore, for example, Abba Rabba, nice long bracha, that's called a short bracha. And Hashkivenu, which is a lot shorter, that's called a long bracha. Sorry, not Hashkivenu. Baruch Shama, right, or the first bracha of Shemana Esrei. That's called the long bracha. Long and short means, long means it begins and ends with Baruch, short means that it doesn't. Oh, so he says, well, the Rambam and the Rashba say, no, it's not talking about those brachas, it's talking about the brachas before. Both in the morning and in the evening, you have one long one and one short one, according to this definition. The first bracha, Yotzer Or, is a long bracha, begins and ends with Baruch. Avarab is a short bracha, it only ends with Baruch. Same by Mary, right? That's the Rashba, and therefore the Rashba says that that's all we mean when we say don't make a long bracha short, don't make a short bracha long. It means don't cut out Baruchs and don't add Baruchs. But he says explicitly against what we said before. He says the Chachamim never bothered to exactly formulate the bracha. There's the general content of the bracha that Chachamim want you to say. How you formulate it is your business. You want to say it long, say it long. You want to say it short, say it short. You have less time, knock out a few words. You have more time, say it longer. All that doesn't matter, the Rashba says. Exactly how many words you say in a bracha, none of that matters. And therefore, all the insertions are fine, etc., etc. Therefore, also, the difference between the schos is fine. Chazal, he says, we don't find anywhere in Shas. Apparently, he didn't hold of this sefer that the Rosh has. But he says, we find nowhere in Shas that the Chachamim made a point of spelling out for us exactly what the formula of each bracha is. And he says, the reason Chazal didn't spell it out to us is because it doesn't matter. You're supposed to know in general what the content of the bracha is, and you basically follow that. It doesn't matter exactly what you did say and what you didn't say. Interesting approach, and that's what's accepted la halacha l'maisa. What?
L'maisa, if I'm reading Krishna, you know, and I'm in the bracha, and I skip a few lines, I just keep going and not reading.
Okay, so if you're talking in terms of being yotze, yes. If you said any bracha and you skipped a couple of lines or added things, you're yotze. Yet you certainly shouldn't do that. Because however you slice it, Lamaisa, after having cited the Rashba, which we are accepting as the authoritative approach, the Mishnah Berurah brings him down, cites him as the authoritative approach, which is also the basis for all the insertions that we make. At the same time, we have to realize that the formula of the brachas as we have them certainly were well planned. Even with what the Rashba says. What the Rashba says, and it's on the essential level, it's not essential, it's not critical to the bracha that you say exactly the words as we have them. But, certainly, those words were very carefully planned. And therefore, a person should certainly not go and just readjust brachas at whim. But, like we know in Shemana Esrei, if you decide you want to insert a personal request in the middle of a bracha, you can do so. The Sepaitz can say, don't do that in a regular way. Don't turn the bracha into a different bracha. Don't, on a regular basis, say a longer version or a shorter version. But, yes, here and there, insertions are fine. Now, one other addition in this context is that, on the contrary, the Mishnah Berurah says that when it comes to the different Nuschos, right, Nusach Ashkenaz, Nusach Sfad, he says, don't worry about any of this. Don't worry about the additions or the subtractions, etc. Every person should stick with his Nusach because all these Nuschos, the Arizal said, all these Nuschos are rooted in very high places. It used to be that all of Klal Yisrael said one Nusach and somehow that covered everything. But he says, the Maisa, the Arizal says, this is Mishnah Berurah cites, this is not just Kabbalah, this is Halacha, that there are a few different places, so to speak, that tefillahs need to hit. The way he puts it is, there are 12 gateways, each one corresponding to a different shevet of Klal Yisrael. He says that the different Nuschos that we have, different ones hit different places. And therefore, it's very important that we have this diversity of nuschos. Now, this applies for real nuschos that were developed by people like the Arizal or the great people of old. For us today to come and figure out some more nuschos, we'll create our own Menashe and Ephraim to add to the Shvatim. That certainly we don't do. But when you're dealing with Nusach Ashkenaz as opposed to Nusach Sfar, and you're wondering which is the real nusach, which is the true nusach, the Arizal says, forget about all that. Each one serves a different purpose, and we want them all being said. And therefore, a person should stick with whatever nusach he has, not worry about that maybe a different one is more accurate. As far as the insertions goes also, by the way, it's just interesting to note. The insertions, right, these insertions like Yotzeris and things like that, were controversial. The Shulchan Aruch opposed them. But the Ramah very strongly defends them. And Therefore, he concludes that, no, in a place where they are practiced, one certainly should say them. The Shla adds that, for example, there are insertions that were composed by one of the most famous composers of these piyutim was Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. He was right in the post-Talmudic period. He was one of the Rishonim, and he composed insertions that are meant to be inserted to the tefillahs. The Shla says, for example, there's a certain insertion that in some kehilas they say in the Yom HaNoraim, in the Bracha of Yetzer Ar. The Shla says that when he actually composed that piyut, a fire came down and was surrounding his head. Meaning that these things were affecting very, very, very great things. These weren't just nice poetic compositions. These people were dealing in the upper worlds and they knew exactly what they were doing. And every word is very, very, very well thought out. Okay, so bottom line, if we're putting the missions... What's that? Oh, Ishmael, okay, right. And the truth is, we can even say that what we consider... What we take for granted now, the insertions of Zecheinu L'chaim, etc., are also subject to this whole discussion. Right? For going with Rashi's approach, it might not be a thing to do. But Lamaisa, we paskin that it's okay. So bottom line, what is the Mishnah telling us? The Mishnah is telling us that you shouldn't shorten long brachas and you shouldn't lengthen short brachas. The way we're taking that Lamaisa, the Halacha Lamaisa perspective is, it doesn't mean that you can't add or subtract a little bit to the words of the bracha. You certainly ought to if you do. All it means is that those brachas that begin and end with Baruch, that beginning and ending with Baruch is essential to the bracha. You can't take a bracha that begins and ends with Baruch and knock off one of them, thus shortening the bracha. Or a bracha that does not begin or end with Baruch, which is short in that sense, don't lengthen it by adding the Baruch. Okay.